Hello, and thanks for joining us for the Poverty Research and Policy Podcast from the Institute for Research on Poverty at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm Dave Chancellor. This is our September 2018 episode, and we're going to be hearing about research practice partnerships. A few weeks ago, I had the opportunity to sit down with Carrie Lawton, Eric Grodzki, and Beth Vade. Between the three of them, they're involved in a couple of research practice partnerships that we'll be talking about here. Beth and Eric are two of the co-directors of the Madison Education Partnership, or MEP, which is a more formal research practice partnership between the Madison Metropolitan School District and researchers at UW-Madison. We'll also be hearing about efforts between the Department of Public Instruction, which is Wisconsin's state education agency, they'll talk about as the SEA here, and UW-Madison that Carrie and Eric are involved in, which largely involve working together on data sharing and cooperative grants. So when we first started talking, I asked the three of them to introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about their work.
Yeah, my name is Carrie Lawton. I'm happy to be here. I'm a research analyst here at DPI, and I was hired to work on our latest state longitudinal data systems grant. And so I work with the researchers and our research partners at UW to work on some of those specific things, that specific research projects that were in that grant proposal, but then overall just sort of work on the grown a bit into this larger research partnership kind of work, sustainability of what we're doing now, those types of things.
I'm Eric Grodzki. I'm a professor of sociology and educational policy studies. I co-direct the Madison Education Partnership with my colleague Beth Vade, who is here, and Katie Elkind, who is not, who's in educational psychology. And I'm also PI on the university side of the partnership that Carrie was just describing.
I'm Beth Vade, and I am the qualitative research supervisor in the Madison School District in our research and program evaluation office. And I also am co-director of the Madison Education Partnership.
So initially, I asked Eric and Beth to tell us about the Madison Education Partnership and how it came to be.
So the Madison Education Partnership was formed between the Wisconsin Center for Education Research, which is housed in the School of Education, and the Madison Metropolitan School District 3 years ago, I guess. We started talking about like four and a half years ago. And it was really formed from ideas that Jen Cheatham, who's the superintendent of Madison's public schools, and Bob Matthew, who directs WCER, shared about their objectives for increasing both the utility of research to the district, but also the research opportunities the university enjoyed. And so they came to the table with some objectives related to those. Jen also came to the table having been at the Chicago Consortium for School Research, which is one of the oldest research practice partnerships in education. So she kind of organically got it and was interested in seeing something like that get off the ground. So it was sort of a perfect time, I think, to build this partnership.
Yeah, I feel like in a lot of the research practice partnership circles, you talk about your origin story and like what got you up and going. And I think it was this unique moment in time of two leaders who had kind of the same question about how to bring these two organizations together to better outcomes for kids here in Madison. And then were willing to invest the time and the people and get the right people involved on both sides to think about structurally, how do we put this thing together so that it can take on problems of practice that matter, not just today or even tomorrow, but over the course of time.
Could you give me some examples of some of the things that you work on, that you're working on right now?
Yeah, so we've done a lot of work in the early childhood sphere, so particularly around our four-year-old kindergarten program. So we've done, you know, a variety of topics connected to it. We've looked at enrollment patterns. We've looked at outcomes for kids when they enter kindergarten to think about the impact of participating in that program. We've looked at family engagement, social-emotional learning, a whole kind of array of topics off of that. So that's been one portfolio of work. We've also worked on looking at attendance patterns for kids in kindergarten through third grade and thinking about how does attendance look for those kids and what does that mean for the outcomes they're getting in school. So those are two pretty concrete examples of work we've kind of run the course with at this point. So, yeah.
And we're currently in the field with an experiment looking at home visiting to see how home visits from kindergarten teachers, five-year-old kindergarten teachers, can affect the transition kids and families experience going from four-year-old to five-year-old kindergarten. And so that's, I think, going to be really interesting. But we're only a couple weeks into doing the home visits and collecting data on those.
I'm wondering if we can talk more about the origin story of mm-hmm. kind of how this got started. So, I mean, it's been in place for about 3 years, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing that there's planning leading up to this.
It's probably been four and a half years. There was probably a solid year of nothing but conversations. And they started, I would say, pretty global about just thinking about the relationship between our two organizations and what kind of things we felt like would move the needle for kids, what were the best things about both sides we could bring to the table, and a lot of trust building, a lot of kind of laying things out there about, you know, and guarded conversations that became less guarded over time. And so there was a team of, you know, 6 to 8 people that would meet relatively frequently to talk this out. And then I would say 6 months or so into that, there was this moment where Bob and Jen both said, well, let's really go down this road. Like, we had read some of the national research on research practice partnerships and their structures. We had gathered some, we had talked with people who worked in other organizations like the one we were thinking about. We had had a lot of conversations at the table. And at that point, at least on my side, Jen said to myself and to my boss, Andrew Statz, who's the head of research accountability and data use, she said, go and try to make this thing real, like actually sit down, let's map it out, and let's play this out. And so then at that point, both sides kind of brought their people to the table, and we started meeting weekly. We started putting together MOUs and data use agreements and talking about how you'd structure this. And that has continued. I mean, we meet weekly, we talk a lot. It's a significant investment, but there was sort of this like dating period, and then you decided like, nope, we're going to try to really make this work. And then it was sitting down to figure out what would it look like. And now it's just in the point of like, now you just got to do the hard work every day to keep it moving.
There's this sort of long history of varying relationships between the university and both state and local government. Sometimes partnerships work really well and sometimes not. I mean, maybe going into it, I mean, were there any sort of preconceptions about what people were expecting, or you know, you talked about being guarded, and that could be the wrong question.
Yeah,
but, yeah.
I mean, I can say a little bit more about what led to it, which is related to this, right? But it's more on the district side that I can sort of make. Well, I can make sense on both. So, on the district side, as Beth said, there's a lot of work that's still going on in the district.
Mm-hmm.
One of the challenges for the district has been that while lots of work goes on in the district, very little comes back to them. And so you'll have PIs from the university go in there, they've got some grant money or some seed money, they go do their stuff, they go away, and the district's like, hello, what'd you find? Hello, hello, you know, so they're getting nothing back. And that was a problem from the district side. From the university side, whether true or not, the sense was that we were having increasing difficulties getting access to the district to do research. And so people were wondering what's going on, why isn't the district letting us in? So there was a lot of, you know, outside of our relationship in the partnership, there was a lot of relationship building the two institutions needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that having the partnership has helped that a bit. I think it's probably easier to see on the district side just because Beth's closer to every, like where research funnels through is outside her door. whereas organizationally, I'm not close to the IRB or have a sense of all the work that's flowing through WCER.
Mm-hmm.
But that was part of what happened. And then actually with the SEA, we have a long history of working with the Department of Public Instruction, and that's also had its rough spots and its better periods. But the architect of the grant that funds this is a guy named Jared Knowles, who's a terrific analyst who came up through the university, got his doctorate in political science, and came to work at the Department of Public Instruction. So when the call for proposals came out on this last grant cycle, and it was quite explicit that the state education agency needed to partner with another organization to work with on research. It could have been a university, it could have been a nonprofit, but it had to be something outside of the state agency. Jared called us and the Institute for Research on Poverty because he knew both organizations. And we were both, of course, very interested, and that's how it started.
I do think that it sort of comes into play even now as we sort of move through these partnerships. I think it's important to have somebody as the PI on the grant, but also high up within DPI who really trust research and researchers and, you know, has a real understanding of the benefit that partnering brings. That sort of makes as you're deciding which projects to do, how you go about it, how you move forward in the future, I think it just makes it a lot easier to sort of get these things rolling.
Mm-hmm. And it evolves to a point where, you know, we can suggest things. As Carrie was saying, it's sort of been a fairly flexible funding structure in terms of projects we take on. So an example is with my colleague Beth Grau at WCER. We suggested that it might be beneficial to create a network of school districts that serve a large share of our African American youth to come together and think about early childhood education and opportunities for increasing equity in early childhood education. We came to the team at DPI with that idea, and they said, you know, we think we can secure some funding from this grant to support that work. Why don't you go ahead and do that, right? It's a great project. I think it's going to be great for the state, but I also think it takes that collaboration, that trust, to for them to say, oh, yeah, okay, we think you can pull that off. We're willing to invest.
Yeah. Well, and there's some level, and I would imagine it's the same for DPI, and I know on the MMSD side, that the trust that you build through that allows you to sort of believe that the motives are inherently good. And because I think not only would, from the district perspective, we'd have all this research going on we wouldn't hear about, but when we would hear about it, it would feel like it was more designed as a public shaming of what was happening, in our, like that pointing out gaps, that sort of doing the work that researchers do, which is to lay these things out in the space so that people can talk about them, feels like you're sort of undercutting the efforts of good, smart people who are trying to do right by kids. And I think you have to lay those things out so you can start crafting solutions, but it goes a lot better when you feel like you know the person who's saying it has the right things in mind, believes in the people in this organization, and is truly trying to help this organization, this leadership get better. And you can't do that unless you know each other to some degree. And so I know it's important that, like, for Jen, for Andrew, for myself, that when we say something that isn't flattering about the district, it's coming from a place of, but we believe these are smart, capable people who will do right by kids when they have what they need, and we want to give them what they need. And it's a very different frame for research than, like, we're going to come find out things that you aren't telling us. And that's, like, you can't get there without some relationship building. And I would think for DPI it'd be very similar circumstance. So,
mm-hmm. So could I ask how so far you've been able to use this research? Because mm-hmm. we talked about kind of that hello moment. Mm-hmm. So if that's not the case, or that's not the case as much, how is this benefiting at the classroom level or at the district level? What are we seeing?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of ways in which, and it's diffuse, right? Like most policy work, it's not as direct as you'd like it to be. Like, it's not like MET puts out a study that says this and the district says, okay, here we go, and off we go and do it. And the board says, charge on, and teachers go on and do it. Like, it doesn't work
that
way.
Which would be awesome.
It would be awesome on so many levels, but it, like, doesn't work that way, right? So you have to think about what, and we were having this conversation earlier, like, what does a win look like and what does successful use look like? And I think for us, the fact that MEP is part of conversations that we were never part of before. The fact that people are thinking and talking about the areas that we've looked at that they weren't thinking and talking about before. So our 4K work has been a really good example where we started to think about, well, now that we understand the program better, where can we push in to change these results? Maybe we need to think about why we're getting this particular result. We had for a while thought, so we have half day 4K, and there had been kind of this ongoing belief that there was a difference between the afternoon and the morning sessions, that inherently, despite the fact curriculum was the same, despite the fact you had the same number of hours, that there was something about going to afternoon or morning that made outcomes different for kids. And so we went in and looked at that and basically said, not particularly, right? Like, it really doesn't particularly matter, not nearly as much as some other things about these programs do. And it's not like there was a moment in time where all of a sudden everyone said, we all agree, we're no longer talking about this. But in the last year and a half, I haven't heard anybody bring that up to the degree that the previous, you know, 4 years that I heard people constantly saying that was going to be the thing. We've changed now what we think might be the change agent in programmatically for 4K to be more along the lines of the things that seem to be coming from the research, thinking about all day 4K, thinking about the sites that you're choosing and who's in those sites, and then thinking about instructional quality, like what's actually going on in the classroom, not all of these other kind of programmatic pieces that we thought were leading the charge, which is great. It tells our teachers, like, you matter, you are what's making the difference for kids, and it gives us a new place to think about what can we do to support you better to help kids, which has queued up a whole new line of research for MAP. So, yeah, it's been really great that way.
Yeah, as a member of the SEA, I sort of see that impacting kids thing as something that we can really bring to the table. Mm-hmm. I mean, what the researchers give us, expertise, you know, knowledge of capacity, is sort of obvious, but we can provide data, you know, and that's great, mm-hmm. and we can provide funding, you know, grants, and that's great, and stuff like that. But I think that a lot of researchers want to have their research mm-hmm. get out there and impact, and it's not, you know, easy for us to have that change, but we can make sure that we get it to the people that can make decisions. We can make sure that we can broadcast it mm-hmm. out to the state and do our best to make sure that there's some uptake on what we learn from research.
Which is satisfying, because you do want your research used, at least many of us want our research used in more applied fields. But it also makes the research much higher quality, because you gain insights. Mm-hmm. Well, for example, so this new stream of work to which Beth alluded, we have funding from the U.S. Department of Education's Institute for Education Sciences to do a line of work around professional development for four-year-old kindergarten. And we'll start off doing structured observations of classrooms, and then we're going to work with the lead, early learning lead, who's a co-PI on the grant, Colleen Watoon, and with 4K teachers to try to figure out what are the holes in professional development and what are the right approaches to addressing them. That has clear applied potential, but it also means you're on the ground with the people who engage in this work every day, and so the insights you can glean as a researcher are much richer than if you were in your office plugging away at secondary data, which I do all the time and I love, but there are limits to that, right? You're really, if you want to think about it differently, you're getting to the data generation process, right? You're right there, and so you learn stuff that you wouldn't otherwise know.
And you get connections to the people who can use it. Like at a level that organizations on paper are one thing, but organizations in real life are a totally different beast. And so you're able to then see how this stuff works in practice, and you're able to figure out like who are the players that get things done in organizations, who are the right people that need to be looped in to make these decisions to use what we have then found, which is great.
In the research part of the process, and what does the collaboration look like? Are you reading stuff that you all write? Are you writing things together? How does that functionally work?
Well, Eric usually emails me and tells me he wants me to do a podcast. Or
that's how it goes.
Something like that.
Yeah. Those have been some of our best times. It depends on the project and the partner. So with the partnership with the Department of Public Instruction, thus far there's really been more of a division between the research side and the SEA. Where they're awesome about getting us the data. They're awesome about helping us think about things that crop up in the data and acting as liaisons to other parts of the Department of Public Instruction. But at the end of the day, it's my team that's writing a report up. We'll send it to them. They'll look at it. But it hasn't been a sort of co-authoring process,
yeah.
Right? And we're working toward that. We haven't gotten there yet. With the work with the Madison School District, we've taken the lead on writing, but Beth has really been at the table from inception of what are we looking at and how are we going to analyze these data? What does this mean? Preliminary results. She will edit the paper. She will rewrite stuff. She will frame it. She will give us insights into the organizational side. I don't think you want to say it that way. Or, you know what, if you say it this way, this is going to happen. And one time I was like, no, it's not. And it turned out that's what happened.
That's what happened.
I only had to learn that lesson once.
Yeah.
So much more involved in all steps of the process with the mm-hmm. Madison side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with our relationship, I think a lot of the collaboration or research is around the data involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we fulfill mm-hmm. data requests, but we're also there to say, hey, this is what we have, this is how it's collected, this is what inferences you can make from it, and this is what you might want to be careful of,
mm-hmm.
things like that. I think about, you know, co-authoring, and I'm not sure that we're ever going to have people here that are going to have time to sit down and write something. So
mm-hmm.
I really see us being able to inform with the data. I would love to.
I don't think you're right, though. I think the way it would work is that we would write the first draft, which is a heavier lift than coming in and editing it or making suggestions about what's missing or what doesn't need to be there, right? Because that's the kind of stuff that in our writing that we've done for the most part.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could edit a paper.
There you go.
it's the best way to do it. No, but it does take, like, I'd like to think that my value comes in not only sort of saying how to say something, but actually, like, I mean, looking at those results and saying, like, that doesn't, like, that might make sense. It doesn't seem right. Or, like, explain this to me in a way we're going to understand. And that uncovers, we've uncovered problems in the data we didn't realize were problems in the data until we started looking at results and going, like, that doesn't make any sense to write up. And I don't know a researcher independently would catch those things. In fact, from seeing the few reports we do get back, we occasionally will get something as a district back and be like, you just didn't understand that data. Like, everything you said is correct about it, but you fundamentally missed something about it that you would have had to catch really early on. I think a lot of the work of MET, because there are multiple district voices at the table, those things get caught pretty early in the process. So by the time you get to the end, if we're quibbling, we're quibbling about, like, what's the action that should be taken. We're not quibbling about, does this actually mean what you said it meant?
Well, sometimes they come up rather late in the process.
Sometimes. It's a, you know, iterative.
It happens.
But in these new studies, so in these sort of new iteration of studies we have where we're collecting new data as opposed to mining existing data, I think the district is also even more actively involved in that because you have to be in some ways, like to get into schools, to get access, to do things that people want to participate in. You need a different level of involvement if you're truly going to say this is a partnership. It's not a partnership if all we're doing is opening the door for you. Like, we have to be part of that the whole way.
Another instrumental thing, having Beth at the table in the writing of this, is that I will write things that I think aren't academic, and I turned out to be wildly incorrect. And she can not only help identify those rather efficiently and mercilessly, but also as we iterate through, how about if we said it this way? What if we used a graph like this? You know, tremendously helpful in getting us where we need to be if we want to communicate to a broader audience. And so I think my capacity to communicate my research has increased markedly through our collaborations.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about reaching these outside audiences or what kind of reactions to these partnerships you've had from other people?
Take a shot.
Yeah, take a shot.
So in research practice partnership land, where Beth and I have spent a fair bit of time recently, partly because of funding we have from the Spencer Foundation, partly because we're a member of the National Network of Education Research Practice Partnerships, NNERP.
Sure are.
and you're actually on the steering committee?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. It's sort of gratifying being recognized in that community for doing some pretty good stuff. Mm-hmm. It's also, I think we both find it very reassuring when we go to those meetings that, like, we're doing really well. Like, we're not at the bottom of the list, you know. Mm-hmm. There are things that we are still working on as a partnership, but there are a lot of things that seem to be humming along. Mm-hmm. And having recognition and appreciation from that group actually means something to us because they've been doing this for a little while longer than we have, for the most part. It also increases the exposure of the partnership and, for my purposes, of the School of Education. So, for example, we've written a few blogs that go into Education Week, which is a big trade publication in the education world. And people see that, right? Mm-hmm. Other districts see that. Other superintendents see that. Mm-hmm. Other researchers see that. So it's been good press for us, more broadly speaking. I think generally reactions have been pretty positive. On the SEA side, it's a little more of a closed community, it seems like.
Yeah. And so we have actually been sort of put up as a model. Like, I have the phone calls with our federal monitors each month, and they love what we're doing on the research and really the partnership angle. I think that they're very impressed with just the fact that we get together, you know, that we have meetings regularly.
So the bar might not be that high.
And so I was asked to do a session at one of their conferences, and then at Stats DC in Washington, D.C., Eric and Maria Kinchon were nice enough to come to Washington, D.C. for the sole purpose of doing this hour presentation in front of 10 people, you know.
It's a partnership.
And, you know.
And stuff that benefits your partner.
And so I know that our federal monitor's name is Charles. I know that Charles is really sort of looking to us and having us, you know, wanting us to be more involved with the other states that are having SLDS, because research and evaluation was sort of a core focus that a lot of people put into their grants. It was one of the things that that you could focus on. A lot of people did.
It also, honestly, and we've talked about this at our other meetings, like it helps a lot that we're all here in Madison, right? So, you know, I met with Beth this morning at WCER, which is a 4-6 block walk from her office. Happened to bump into her up on the square around lunchtime, which is, you know, another 8 blocks from my office, and then walk the other 3 to DPI. You know, most partnerships don't have that ease of access, and I think that makes a lot of difference.
Yeah,
I agree. There's a certain amount of face-to-face, yes, you know, that goes on.
Yeah.
If we talk about trust, you know, it's like being in the same room with each other and not trying to do everything through email where things are easily, you don't get any body language. You know, if something happens, you can't see how dejected you feel about it and stuff like that. So, I mean, I really do think it's important to, I just think it's really nice that we're all, you know, sort of together here.
I think the point about face-to-face is really big, that there is just something about knowing someone as a person that makes you feel very different about the work, right? Like there's a level of, you sort of build trust, you can read emotion a lot better out of somebody, and in the end they become real people, right? I've been with the district for 6 years. I've overseen sort of all of our external research connections, and conversations we have about researchers sort of as a unit or an amorphous group, like robot human being over here, can sound very different than if you say, let's talk about Eric. And then we talk about Eric. And like, you know, sometimes flattering, I'm sure sometimes maybe, perhaps not so.
Oh, but come on.
But like, they're real conversations. And you have to think of like, when we make these decisions about how we're going to react, I'm talking about a real human being who has kids and a family and lives down the street and I could bump into at Woodman's. Like, there are realities to that that are very different than I'm going to talk to a researcher, I'm going to send them a formal letter, and we're going to reply as an organization to them. And I'm sure it works in reverse. I'm sure when you talk about the district, it's a lot easier to sort of not think about the implications of what you're doing both relationally and technically, if you don't think of that actual human being. And so the in-person, face-to-face, the time you spend makes the work better because you're considering it in a much wider way than you were before.
It's great, all the trust and the face-to-face, but it also poses some kind of, not an issue, but if you're talking about sustainability, right? I mean, how do you sustain these things if somebody leaves for another job? You've got this other person coming in.
Yeah.
They don't have this trust relationship. And that's what, you know, is hard about these things. You need to sort of get from the interpersonal to some institutionalized, but I think interpersonal is part of it. So it's like, how do you get it past this small group of folks? I know that at DPI, how we're sort of looking at things in the future, you know, if we can't separate it, and we shouldn't separate it, we want to at least increase the connections, right? So we would like, you know, the faculty members that are teaching policy courses to have their students come in and share out their work and have discussions with us about policy.
There are different challenges in the two partnerships, I think, for sustainability. And I have my head much more around how I want to pursue it with the Madison Education Partnership than I do with the partnership with the SEA. Partly because the Madison Education Partnership was always designed to be an organization. And so, you know, we have spent some time, Beth and I, talking about, you know, well, we're not going to be in this position forever. What sort of work do we need to do to create an organization with staying power. And I think this is a common challenge, right? Yeah. It's great while it lasts, but you want to make structures so that, you know, if the next two directors don't get along as well as we do on our two sides, they can still get along well enough, and the organization will still continue to yield benefits to the university and to the school district, right?
Yeah.
Whereas with the work with the SEA, it really is grant-driven at this point. And we're starting to talk now about how do we create a more sustainable relationship. Mm-hmm. My guess is the next step of that sustainability is writing more grants as opposed to creating an organizational structure. Mm-hmm. But just as Carrie said, you know, so I'm teaching a class in the fall where I've already hit up some folks at DPI to come talk to my students, and we'll hit them up to be an audience for their policy discussions and all that. So we'll still work on that. It's just a little more tenuous than having an organizational structure that both partners feed into.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the beauty of these partnerships in some ways, especially in a community like Madison, where everything is right here, you have the state agency, you have the second largest school district in the state and a world-class research university, is like we're all kind of working on similar stuff, but we work alone a lot. And I don't think it's because we want to. I think it's a lot of times because you just don't know the people that know the people to put you all in the same room. So, like, the world is not that large of people doing this research work. And so through the fact that I work with Eric on Madison Education Partnership and he works with Carrie, all of a sudden now I know something about SLDS that I didn't know before. And you start increasing the scope. And my guess is the sort of hope is that over time, then as you take on the bigger, thornier problems that like MEP couldn't take on alone, DPI can't take on alone, that you've built these relationships and networks of research that you can then start tackling bigger and bigger things because you have people at the table who are brokers to each other. And I think I never intended, like I was so worried during the MEP's origin of just being like, we gotta get this thing to work right here. And one of the sort of unintended benefits has been all of a sudden we're tied into all these other things and people that we weren't part of before. And so no longer can we be like, DPI. We're like, no, they have names. Like there are people there with names. Talk about those people. There's a project we're working on. I know that through these other people, they're also working on it too. Maybe there's a future to work together on that stuff. And that's kind of, to me, that's what research practice partnerships at the next level are about. Like your own partnership is part of it, but it's this belief in like this more collective way of doing the work. So that was very touching.
That was good.
Yes. That's good. It's like that's a little more than normally, but just occurs to me.
I mean, so if you're giving advice to say somebody that's looking to start one of these, I mean, you've talked sort of generally about a lot of things, you know, like the face-to-face stuff, and so we sort of have the benefit of just, you know, close proximity and all that. But what would you tell somebody who's looking to get started? I'm sure you've had this discussion before with other groups, right?
I will give you my often poorly received first piece of advice to faculty. Not until you have tenure. It takes time. It takes investment up front. The first project we took on under MEP, I took on knowing full well there was no publication potential in that project at all. It was the right project for us to do. I have no regrets about doing it. But I knew that was an investment in the school district and in the partnership, and ultimately then an investment in me. So I'm not saying I'm totally unaware that it has some benefits for me, but they're long-term strategies, right? And if you're an assistant professor looking at tenure, that's not a great use of your time. Now, there are going to be opportunities, hopefully, that come up for more mature partnerships. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the work we're doing around home visiting, that's under a randomized controlled trial, which is something that never would have been able to happen had we not had this relationship. Mm-hmm. And if there were a junior faculty colleague of mine who was interested in home visiting and approached me about getting involved in the project, I would be happy to bring her or him along on the project, but would not encourage them to do it all by themselves, right? Mm-hmm. So there are ways to do it, but starting a research practice partnership involves a substantial investment of personal time.
Mm-hmm. I think certainly the trust building aspect of it cannot be undersold. Like the time you have to spend, the amount of being willing to open up and have candid conversations and knowing that you won't be able to do that on day one, it'll probably take a long time before you get to the point that you have them and you're probably not doing the right work until you can. I think all of that is important. I think there is a level of, and we were talking about this earlier today, about like you also have to be in it mutual but not simultaneous benefit. Was that your description of this belief that at times you're going to give and get nothing back, and that's okay. And in fact, it's not only okay, it's necessary. That it can't be that every time we go into something that if I put some time in, I'm like, come on, what's the district's benefit? Like, give something back to me. Sometimes I do things that fully, as in my job at MMSD and for the district, have like no value in return to us, but they matter to my partner. And therefore, I do them because I know when the time comes that that should be reciprocated on my end. And I think if you take that longer term view towards these partnerships, I feel like you're more likely to be successful. If you're sitting around every time thinking about like, we both have to win, we both have to win, we both have to win, you're probably going to stumble because it just doesn't work that way. And certainly it hasn't worked that way for us, but it's worth it. Like, it's worth it. And you just got to kind of have that view of, if this is work you believe makes a difference and is important to do, you have to be willing to put in and kind of give a little to get a little. So,
yeah, I'd piggyback on that and just go back to the importance of sort of flexibility and and things. Like Eric was talking about, we have some specific sort of projects. And so once those, you know, get done, once you tick off the boxes of the subtasks of the project plan, right, eventually if you want to continue things, you're going to need more, you're just going to need more funding. It's the difference sort of between a partnership and contracted work, right?
Yes.
If you do one project and you say, oh, we found this, we're curious in this, and we might be able to tell you this and that, and you say, sure, you know, yeah, go for it. And I think that's important.
I think the only other one that I think has helped a lot, we've talked a little bit around it, is this idea of these folks that can cross the boundaries a little bit. That there have to be people as part of your partnership who can speak the research side and can speak the practice side organizationally, in particular. But like, if you want to do really good work that will also be used, you have to have people that understand at some level both sides of that equation. And if you don't, you have to have people that are at least willing to learn about it. They're very different beasts. And you need to be able to come into it knowing that you'll have expertise on both, but you have to be able to speak across. And that's a big part.
The organizational brokering is something I totally underestimated, among the many things.
Yeah.
Because, you know, so I'm a professor, so I'm sort of an independent contractor. Like, I'm sort of, you know, I work for the state, but I'm also kind of self-employed. I don't have a boss. And so my organizational structure is pretty flat. So I don't spend a lot of time thinking about, well, how do I need to work this out so that I can satisfy these people, get access to this thing, and make sure these people know about it and these people use it, right? It's a lot of different groups to coordinate, and I would have no idea how to do that. And it's come up in both the partnerships in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's, you know, there's the level of like, you can't say that, someone will get fired, that someone being me. And there's also the level of like, you telling me like, I can't change that. That fundamentally undermines the research. And those are like, you have to know how to stand your ground on both sides, but you do have to be able to talk across them and be like, I can recognize and see how what you're saying is important. So let's figure out how to move from that, which is very different than like a contract, or very different than an independent research, which lives on sort of the two poles there. So
I have not given my customary shout out to my friend Jack Jorgensen, who is part of the reason I got into all this stuff. Jack is a wonderful human being, has worked for the Madison Metropolitan School District, has worked for the Department of Public Instruction, is incredibly dedicated to kids, but also really great at relationship building and sustaining. Mm-hmm. And when I first came back to Wisconsin after working at a couple other universities, I was already very interested in working on an equity agenda to reduce inequalities in kids' opportunities. And was doing some stuff with Jack. And Jack kept saying, you know, relationships are really, that's critically important. And I'd say kind of like, yeah, but I mean, these are technical problems. We should be able to look at experimental evidence, bring some data to the table. We're going to like talk to people. They're going to be, oh, yeah, that's the way to do it. And then it's going to be awesome, which was totally incorrect. And Jack, God bless him, patient soul, you know, brings me around to like, okay, so I guess relationships are pretty important and worth building. And that's been a game changer for my career. Like, I really enjoy this work at a professional and personal level. And I fully appreciate the importance of those relationships, you know, even when sometimes there's a little overhead to maintaining them. Mm-hmm. That, you know, and I don't know that we're different. I mean, I think about a buddy of mine who works at Google who used to work at Citigroup. It's relationships. Like, that's how you get things done. And it took me a while to get that, but I think it's really helped me do better research, but also be a more effective policy person.
Mm-hmm. You said, don't be a jerk. Once
I did, yes, that's
an important part.
That's
don't be a jerk.
That's the primary rule. Don't be a jerk. That is, yeah.
Yeah, there is some level of just like be someone people would want to be around, right? Yeah. Like, I think sometimes in professional settings, particularly when the stakes are higher or like the problems feel more meaty, people, in an effort to be more intense about them, can just be people no one wants to be around, right? And can hammer that point. And like, you do have to have some amount of like sense of humor, ability mm-hmm. to laugh a little bit about this, ability to just be someone you'd want to hang out with. And you're probably going to get more work done, and you're going to get more meaningful work done at that. I think we've been very lucky to have organizational support of these partnerships, and like personally from, you know, people that matter to our careers, but also like organizations that believe in doing the right thing by kids and want to use evidence. Like, there is something to that, that you take that away and these are going to be really hard to make happen. I also think my main feeling is also like, you can always do this work. Like, if you're willing to put the time in and do it, you can figure out how to do it right. People inherently, particularly in education, want help. And they want more voices at the table, and they don't have the answers. And it's a very lonely feeling to feel like you're out there and you're not getting what you want for that six-year-old that's sitting there, and you don't know what to do next. And so the more people that can come to the table, not be jerks, and do good work, the better off we all are. And I think partnerships in particular, like for me, if there's professors sitting around being like, I'm not sure, I'm like, try. Like, just come in and try this work, because you're going to find that people want your help. They really do.
And it's kind of funny doing this podcast for IRP, because, you know, the Institute for Research on Poverty has been doing this with the Department of Children and Families forever, right? I mean, from the data sharing agreements that enable a tremendous amount of good research to the cross-pollination of what's an important research topic, what data resources do we have to bring to bear, to the engagement with policymakers that I think, you know, Jennifer Noyes and Lonnie Berger and Maria Kansian do incredibly well. So, you know, it's not like we just invented this. Right. You know, IRP has been doing this for years.
Yeah. So I mean, I noticed a lot of the projects that you guys have in some ways collaborated on do focus on equity, and obviously there are big ramifications for that around our community and the state. Is there anything you want to say about that?
Well, I would say that partnerships are extremely important, I think, to solving issues of equity. We have education data here, right? And we know that educational outcomes are not just what happens in the schools, but we don't have access to that. We have to partner with other people to get a full understanding. Mm-hmm. We want to provide the right supports to the right kids at the right time, and you can't do that by yourself. Looking at, we've got a great longitudinal data system, but we can't get that without partnering with practitioners to know their particular context of and what they can and can't do in terms of an intervention or just what their climate's like. Mm-hmm. And we can't do that without experts in early childhood and IRP, you know, partner. We just can't do it. So it's just, I think it's incredibly important if you want to actually start decreasing, eliminating the gaps.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's the problems of practice that matter to the district, many, if not all, are really focused around issues of equity. We have amazing things in our schools that we have done for kids, and we have amazing kids and teachers who have some of the best things you can see in education happen in Madison schools, and at the same time, we have some of the most problematic and disturbing gaps that you can see. And, you know, we need help with that. And so I don't see a space in which MEP is ever doing work that isn't sort of at its heart focused around these equity issues, mm-hmm. and trying to really disrupt inequities and figure out ways where we can end up in a space, you know, for certainly lots of our historically underserved groups are doing better as a result of the research work that we're doing. I think it's critical.
It is the fundamental shared agenda.
Yes.
And it's the one that led me to graduate school in the first place. It's my academic work is all about social inequality and educational inequality. And so it's natural that when the agendas of the organizations we're partnering with and with our own research agendas align, that's what you go with, right? And, mm-hmm. and it happens to be equity for both moral and intellectual reasons. But I think that really is our fundamental common ground.
Yep.
Yeah.
I want to give a big thank you to Beth Vade, Kerry Lawton, and Eric Grodzki for taking the time to talk about these partnerships. If you want to learn more about the Madison Education Partnership, you can visit their website at mep.wceruw.org. And to learn more about the research partnership work under the State Longitudinal Data System Grant, you can visit dpi.wi.gov/slds. This podcast was supported as part of a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Office of the Assistant Secretary for Planning and Evaluation, but its contents don't necessarily represent the opinions or policies of that office, the Wisconsin DPI, the Madison Metropolitan School District, or the Institute for Research on Poverty. To catch new episodes of the Poverty Research and Policy Podcast, you can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or your favorite podcast app. You can also find all of our past episodes on the Institute for Research on Poverty website. Thanks for listening.